This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Monday means EJ Raddick from the NHL Network. NHL Now, to be specific. 4 to 6 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And he joins us on the occasional Monday here on Game Misconduct when everybody's healthy and willing to do it. And today is one of those days.
It is one of those days, which is great.
So, yeah.
Really happy that it is, because, you know, it's nice for everybody to be healthy.
Yes, it is very nice for everybody to be healthy. And now we can focus on the second half of the season. But I guess more specifically, after I finished recording my podcast and the Michael Kay show started, so I couldn't go back and change it, was the big trade between the Penguins and the Florida Panthers. So what were your thoughts on that big deal?
Well, two things. I thought the Florida Panthers, what they were doing is clearing out some cap room moving forward, because both of those guys had existing contracts that were going to last into the future. Bukestad had two more years at 4-1, and I believe McCann had another year at 1-something. I'm not absolutely sure of that, but the bottom line was they're clearing out cap space because I think they'd like to make a run at Bobrovsky and or Panarin in the offseason if they hit the open market, or if they could maybe even they make a trade for those players right now. Who knows? But I think that they're clearing cap space for potential free agent maneuvering in the offseason. And I think also that Dale Talon was looking to kind of change his mix around a little bit. They've been looking to trade Bukestad. He's seemingly been on the market for like 2 or 3 years. So he goes to the Penguins, and, you know, the Penguins, you know, the Florida Panthers take back, you know, as a way of saving money, and a couple of guys whose contracts will be expiring, so they don't have to worry about them moving forward. Neither Sheahan or Brassard contracts go past this season. So, and for the Penguins, they've been looking for a third center. We'll see if Bukestad can fill that role or not. He might be more of a winger than a center over the long haul, but Jimmy Rutherford, it seems like he likes him. I thought originally that maybe he would get him and flip him for someone else, but it appears that they're going to move forward with McCann and with Bukestad. And it certainly, to me, the Penguins seem to have created more depth. When you think about it in totality, Donnie, they have really changed over their kind of group of forwards around the core guys. When you think about adding a Tanner Pearson and now these two guys. So they've changed things up a little bit there in Pittsburgh. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah, because it definitely, you take a look at that conference and it's all just tooling. If you're going to get through to the Stanley Cup final, you're going to have to get through Tampa. But what you want to try to do is you want to try to make sure you avoid Tampa until you get to the conference final. You don't want to mess with the wild card. You want to make sure you get one of those top three spots so you can make some sort of a run there. And that's what it's all about. And Pittsburgh right now, when you look at them, they're a team that, even though they came off that great win against Tampa where they beat them, scored the first four goals of the game, they've been fooling around with that wild card spot. And they've got to move up, and they've got to catch Columbus, and they've got to catch Washington, or maybe the Islanders if they want to try to win this division. And that means they're going to have to do some work. And you've already seen Toronto make their move for a defenseman. I'm not sure what Tampa would do, calling that game on Saturday, EJ. I'm not sure what Tampa needs. Honestly, they just look so complete as a team. But even if they stay intact, I mean, those teams are going to have to work a lot if they're going to try to find a way to match up with and eventually beat Tampa if you want to make a run to the Cup.
Yeah, I think Tampa's only would be looking for depth players, maybe another defenseman. You know, they've been rumored to maybe be interested in Alec Martinez, someone like that. But, they'd be just doing some tweaking to their roster. But you never know. Guys get hurt. Things change between now and the trade deadline, which is a couple of weeks away now. But, certainly the Tampa Bay Lightning look like they're locked in and with their roster and ready to go. But, as we've seen over many years, Don, right, things can change.
Oh, listen, it's not the first time if they got bounced in the playoffs where you'd say, boy, they were the best team in February, and what the heck happened? But watching them on Saturday, they had a lot of things that were not going for them, right? They had played the night before in an emotional win against the Islanders. Point is a late scratch, right? and again, playing the second of back-to-backs, and they handled the Rangers fairly well. I mean, they had a 3-0 lead. They made it 3-2, but they won the game, and the Rangers are throwing everything they can at them. Now, listen, the Rangers are not anywhere near Tampa, but even on a night where you would have understood had they gotten picked off, they still found a way to win the game. And their backup goaltender, because I thought Deming was really good in the game.
Yeah, it was third and four nights, too.
Yeah.
Coming out of the break. So, there were a lot of things that probably were working against them a little bit, but they find ways to win, and they've got a nice cushion right now. This is a really good team. So the teams in the Eastern Conference are going to have their hands full dealing with the Tampa Bay Lightning come the postseason.
And you just wonder, we've had this conversation before, EJ, who's the team that's got the best shot against them? Now, let's see what Toronto does with having Muzzin, but they're still 15 points back of Tampa. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Montreal's had a nice run here, but I'm just not sure they've got the scoring. Boston's got the scoring. I guess if Rask is healthy, maybe them. Columbus, I'm not sure. Washington, I know they beat them last year, but Washington's only got 2 wins in their last 10. Is there anybody that you look at in the Eastern Conference and say you give them a shot? Is it the Islanders because they've beat them once the last 2 times they played them and did earn a point in the 1-0 loss in the shootout? Could the Islanders be the team that's got the best shot right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably, you know, as we look at it today, as we sit here on the 4th of February, I would say Toronto might be the best shot, even though, the points, they're well behind them in the standings. But you get into a 7-game series, it's a different dynamic.
Sure.
They're a good goalie in Freddie Anderson. They've added Muzzin, to a team. They've really strengthened an area that was perceived as a weakness for them, and they may do something else before the deadline. They've got guys that can score. They're well coached. The Toronto Maple Leafs have a really good group. The Boston Bruins are an experienced team. I mean, although they played Tampa last year and they kind of ran into the buzzsaw, it was a 5-game series. So I don't know what significantly changed since then to make that result any different. Washington is the defending Stanley Cup champions. They haven't played well. You're right, over the last 10, but when they get, they still have the same roster. So, in a 7-game series is always such a different dynamic because so many things can happen. So it's not easy, as you know, Don. I mean, it is not easy to win 4 series in 16 games. The Lightning are really good. They're going to be a bear for anybody to handle, but you never know.
No, you're right. You absolutely never know. And then out west, the team to beat, I guess on the surface here, it would be Calgary just based on the points, but they've kind of slowed down just a little bit. They did win yesterday 4-3 over the Carolina Hurricanes. But is it San Jose? They've warmed up a little bit here, 7 of their last 10. Vegas has all of a sudden lost 4 in a row. That's kind of strange. Winnipeg's still there. So is Calgary the team to beat, or do you give the nod to Winnipeg? Do you give the nod to a San Jose who's starting to get things going here? Who do you think the best team in the West is?
I think it's Winnipeg right now, although it's not a huge margin. I mean, I like Calgary's team as well. I like San Jose's team. And maybe by when it's all said and done, maybe San Jose is going to be the team to come out of there. They're going to need to get better goaltending from Martin Jones, certainly more consistent goaltending. But the Winnipeg Jets, just watching them this week with a really good performance against the Columbus Blue Jackets, where it was a good hard game, and the Jackets came in there determined to play better after a poor outing, and the Jets found a way to win, scored 2 in the third period to win it, and then they just blew the doors off the Anaheim Ducks, and they're getting contributions from even different people now. I mean, Jack Roslovic, who is an American-born kid, I believe he was a first-round draft pick, is kind of finding his way, and a big night against the Ducks, also had a good game against the Blue Jackets, so maybe he's starting to emerge. And they're getting a lot of this done without Byfuglien, who's been hurt, and with Patrick Laine really kind of being in a slump. So I got to figure Byfuglien is going to come back, and Laine is going to figure it out. And, they had the experience of going to the Western Conference Final last year. They got a good goaltender in Connor Hellebuyck. So the Winnipeg Jets, to me, are going to be a tough team to beat.
Now, we've talked about this before, how wide open the West is, but we're getting closer to the trading deadline here, and I guess over the next 3 weeks, things can maybe answer themselves, but I have a sneaking suspicion things aren't going to change all that much, considering they've been this close pretty much all year long, and everybody's played 50-plus games. What do you do if you're one of these teams like Anaheim, Edmonton, Arizona? I mean, you're still there. I mean, you're still within striking distance. Now, do you make a move? Are you a buyer because you want to just get in and see if you can make a run? Or do you look at it realistically and say, we're only in this because the conference just isn't that great at the bottom. I'm not going to sit there and ruin my future on some kind of bogus one and done run in the postseason. I mean, look at Chicago. I mean, they were one of the worst teams in the league. They're 5 points out of a playoff spot and they're playing tremendous hockey. They've won four in a row. So what are these general managers basically from Minnesota down to Chicago? What are they thinking right now on February 4th?
Well, you know, you nailed it. It's going to be hard for them because there's always that temptation. You want to, you want to get in the playoffs because, you know, once you get in, it's been proven. You know, you can get on a little run and things could go well for you, and you could make some hay. I think each case is different. I think, you know, a team like Chicago that has had a lot of success in the last 10 years has won 3 Stanley Cups. I think Stan Bowman probably looks at it differently. Then maybe they do in Edmonton, where they've changed coach, they've changed managers, and there's going to be a different plan in there down the road. So if they have anything that makes sense for them to move, maybe it makes sense to get it to plan for the future. Like I said, I just think each situation is different, but and it also depends on what you have within your roster that is a value to someone else. What can you get in return? And I think that's the thing. I wouldn't be giving, I've said this before, I wouldn't be giving away guys just because, they're not in our plans for the future and want to get something for them. Hey, you got to get something of value, whether that's a second, third round pick or a player or a prospect. I mean, to give somebody a value when you're in the playoff race, or at least has some value to you for a seventh round pick or something, doesn't make much sense to me. So I think each situation is different, and I think these managers will be paying really close attention to these standings now in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And, we'll see. Maybe it'll loosen up a little bit, but I get the sense it's not going to. I think it's going to be really hard.
Yeah, you're right.
Make some decisions. Hey. I mean, the Blues are a great example because Doug Armstrong talked about wanting to shake things up and maybe trading some of his core players, and now all of a sudden they're hot. They've played fewer games than anybody in the Western Conference. They're only a couple points out of a playoff spot, and, all of a sudden they might be a team that's, keeps guys instead of trading them.
Right.
So I think all these managers are going to have some tough decisions in that Western Conference for sure.
Vancouver too, Minnesota. You're right. Yep. All these teams are going to have to make very difficult decisions. And again, we have until February 25th.
Hey, Johnny, there's a great example, right? Minnesota and Vancouver. Vancouver's in a rebuild, continue. They're a little bit ahead of schedule right now. Are they going to go out and do anything? They're not going to trade away prospects or picks. I mean, they might look to acquire somebody if they can get them for something a lesser return, but like Minnesota's in a completely different situation. So that's what I mean. Every situation is a little bit different, so I think that will determine what the teams do.
Yeah, it's hard to believe we're sitting here with Minnesota and Vancouver, both playoff teams, if the season were to end today. Kind of crazy, and Minnesota's looked upon as a bit of a disappointment. Vancouver's been a shocking surprise, so everybody's in a little different boat.
Exactly.
Arizona's a very curious team, too. They lost to San Jose, but I thought they earned a hard-fought point on Saturday, getting that late goal from Archibald, so they may see the value and making a deal and trying to get into the playoffs with, a new coach and trying to build that fan base there, in Arizona. Not a lot of success. Haven't been to the playoffs since the conference final run in 2012. I mean, that's 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So you're right. Everybody's in a little bit of a different boat.
And we'll see. I mean, like I said, maybe it'll loosen up, maybe it won't. But I think you got to stay true to whatever it is you're doing. And, and like I said, Vancouver is the one to me that steps out because they are still rebuilding. They still got good young players. They got more coming. I mean, I wouldn't do anything silly. But on the flip side, the guys in that room are working hard, and you'd love to get in the playoffs if you can. So I think those are the choices that all these managers will make. I mean, Columbus, we've talked about that ad nauseum, their situation, and that's a franchise that's never won a playoff series. So that has to, I think to me, that has to weigh into what you're going to do with those two players. So there's so much that, these guys are going to be busy over the next couple of weeks. Brian McClellan, the general manager of the Capitals today, said, hey, there's some trades to be made, and, he's talking to people. So, I mean, maybe the Caps are going to be more active than we thought.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And you know what? We say February 25th. History tells you that these deals are going to be done well before then because there's just not a lot of time after the 25th, right? I mean, I'm doing the Rangers tonight. After tonight, they've got 30 games left. You get to the deadline, you might run out of time to be able to make a move once the deadline's over with. So I think you're going to see some moves in the next couple of weeks.
If you want, if there's something you want, like in the case of Toronto with Jake Muzzin, it's nice to be able to get that player and get him assimilated into your team as soon as possible. And so that was good on, you know, Kyle Dubas and the Leafs group, because they were able to make that happen. And now they have an extra 3 weeks to have Jake Muzzin be part of the Leafs and like I say, assimilate into the team, into the community, get settled, get a spot in the lineup, get comfortable with the coaching staff, have the coaching staff get comfortable with him. They can know what he can do on a day-to-day basis and kind of help them figure it out. So, you know, I know in the past, Jimmy Rutherford used to say, you know, he'd like to get guys, if he can get them a couple weeks early, that'd be great. But the problem with that is sometimes there's a lot of jockeying back and forth for the, you know, on the price tag for these guys. So sometimes it just doesn't come together in a particular situation. But like you saw in Pittsburgh the other day, I think we're going to see these kind of deals kind of roll out in dribs and drabs over the next couple of weeks.
All right, let's get to the tweets. You ready?
All right, let's go.
All right, Sean says, thanks for the great work with the podcast. Love when you and EJ are on. Another strong weekend for the Islanders. 3 points, only 2 goals allowed. My number one concern is the struggling power play. Is there a trade out there that you could think could remedy what they're going to need to make a run?
I think that the Islanders have the personnel to make that power play better. I don't know if there's a particular player out there that could come in and really be a factor for them. I think for the Islanders, the consideration would be they have such great chemistry with their group right now. So I think Lou will consider that. Lou's history, though, when I think about him as the guy totally in charge. In Toronto, he was there with a number of people. In New Jersey, he was Lou. You know, he was the guy, right? So, and I think that's the case on the island as well. So he made moves at the deadline with the Devils quite often, and I suspect he'll try to do something with the Islanders. And I think, you know, for me, depth defenseman, is an experienced defenseman, somebody like that could help them. But again, the chemistry is unique when you have a team that is really overperformed like this. It was kind of like Vegas last year. George McPhee went out and made some deals anyway. One of them, adding Ryan Reeves, helped. One of them, adding Tomas Tatar, didn't really do much. So we will see what Lou tries to do. But, boy, it's been a special season so far for the Islanders, and a great weekend to go right toe-to-toe with the Lightning in 0-0 game into shootout. And only one goal was scored the entire time. It was Victor Hedman in the shootout. And, you know, the next night to rally to beat the L.A. Kings. So the Islanders' success story continues, and it's been a great work by Barry Trotz and his staff and everybody there with the Islanders this year.
I'll tell you what, it's going to be tough to pick a Jack Adams Trophy winner, because you got Barry, the job he's doing with the Islanders. Peter's job in Calgary, I think, has been terrific, too. Mm-hmm. And even what John Cooper's done, and you know, you can look and say, well, listen, he's got a good team. They went to the Stanley Cup Final in 15. They went to the conference final last year. But if this team ends up finishing with the best record in hockey, sometimes those are the coaches that get ignored, because they've got the talent and they've got the history, but that doesn't mean they're not doing a good job.
He's doing a great job. I mean, to me, we've talked about this before too, Donnie. The Jack Adams is, to me, is always about the expectations game, right? I mean, the guy who wins the President's Trophy doesn't often win the Jack Adams. I mean, last year it was a runaway for Gerard Gallant with Vegas,
sure,
because it was an expansion team, and the expectations weren't for them to finish with over 100 points, and they were great all year, so that was an easy one. I kind of think this is an easy one, too, if it stays the same. I mean, the expectations for the Islanders coming into this season were not to be leading the division by 4 points, you know, in early February. So if the Islanders make the playoffs and continue to play well, and they don't necessarily have to win the division, but if they continue to play well, I think a lot of people are going to be drawn to vote for Barry Trotz, because the expectations were so low and the results now have been very good. So, I mean, I think while you mentioned Bill Peters done a great job, and he probably garnered a lot of support, and certainly in north of the border where it's even a bigger story, you know, you look around the league, other guys have done, you know, really good work. You mentioned, you know, John Cooper for one, but, you know, in the end, if I was voting, which I am not, but if I was, I would probably vote for Barry Trotz, and I wouldn't have to think about it too long.
Yeah. I fortunately am very lucky to have a vote, and that's probably where I would lean as well.
Yeah.
It's something that I really like, excited about. It's always cool, and it's always a lot of fun, and there's always a lot of great candidates, too, and I think there are this year, but not quite the slam dunk. Because there's always those teams that improve and surprise, and sometimes I think that the Paul Maurice will get ignored because Winnipeg's supposed to be good. Things like that, you know, but you kind of forget those jobs. It's always so easy to circle the teams that exceeded the expectations, but sometimes living up to the expectations is just as hard. as exceeding them. So still got a lot of hockey left to be played, but I'd have Peters. I'd have Barry Trotz, definitely. Trotz 1, Peters 2 on my list, and have to think a little bit about who I would go with at 3. There's a couple of different candidates there, but it would probably be tough to ignore Barry Trotz at number 1. Robert says, Don and EJ thought, although they get the second wild card if the season ended today, Columbus has lost 5 in a row. Do you guys think the odds are now in favor of them trading Panarin and Bobrovsky?
Well, I don't, just because, I mean, they're still in a playoff spot. They've had a little bit of, they've lost 5 in a row. It's been a little bit of a rough ride for them. I guess John Terrell is going to have a, if he hasn't had it already, kind of a, they're going to have a meeting in Colorado. I mean, think about that matchup. Two teams that are really struggling right now. The Avalanche have lost 3 in a row, and they're 3 wins in 10 games, and have really been amongst the worst teams in the leagues, you know, from the winning percentage standpoint from mid-December. And Columbus is having their recent skid. So I would still not trade either player. I think the window has passed for that in terms of getting real value. I could always be surprised, and somebody may offer something really, special, and then in which case you have to really consider it. But I just don't think you can get anywhere near value for Panarin, and the same for Bobrovsky, who hasn't played great really this year. He's been a little bit below his standard. I just think with the Blue Jackets, again, unique to their situation, they've never won a playoff series.
Exactly.
Unless I was blown away with a prospect or some kind of something that could go in my lineup now. I mean, the Blue Jackets, they were in the playoffs last year. They're ready to start moving forward now, and not have to go back and think about draft picks that we won't know the players for 3 or 4 or 5 years. So for me, unless it was a great offer, I would hold on to those guys, and I would move forward. We'll see what they decide to do.
I'm all right. And that's another team that gets streaky, and things might change, and they're certainly a playoff team as of right now. And as you said earlier, you're Chicago. You've won 3 cups in the last decade. Maybe you can afford to trade them. You're Columbus, never been out of the first round in history. You know, you got a fan base you're trying to build there in a non-hockey market or a non-traditional hockey market. I think there's probably value to making it in and seeing what you can do. Chris asked a great question, and I've been asking this myself too. Just the Flyers, are they a playoff team? You know, they've won what now, 7 in a row. Last couple have come in overtime. Now, we've seen this before from Philadelphia, right? They seem to be the team that either has a 10-game winning streak or a 10-game losing streak. But with Hart playing well, can they play themselves into being a buyer instead of a seller?
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, something has changed, right, in Philly in the last couple of weeks. Carter Hart has gotten an opportunity to play, and he's played very, very well. And, so the feeling around that team has changed, and they're still a ways out of it, but they've had the good fortune of Columbus and Buffalo kind of struggling. Carolina has played better, but still hasn't been able to make up tremendous ground. I mean, they're closer to the mix, certainly, than they were, but, like, the door is open for the Flyers still, but they have to play really well. And by really well, I'm talking about the kind of finish that the Ottawa Senators had a couple of years ago, or the kind of finish to a season that the Devils had under Jacques Lemaire several years back, where they did not make it, but they just seemingly won every night for 2 months. I mean, that's where the Flyers are at. They'll have to continue to win. There is no margin for error. And, on Monday evening here, they play the Vancouver Canucks at home. They have to win that game. I mean, those are the things they have to do right now. So they've put together the 7 in a row. And I'm not saying they have to win every game for the rest of the season, but they have to win a substantial number of them if they're going to make up the points necessary to get there. If they were in the Western Conference, they'd be right in the middle of things.
Everybody would.
They play the Canucks. The Canucks, I think, have the same amount of points, and the Canucks are in the playoffs, and the Philadelphia Flyers are not. The Canucks have 2 more points than the Flyers. So, like, the Canucks are in the playoffs, and the Flyers are 7 points out. So they can get there. We've seen at least one team in the recent times, the Senators, do it. But if you look at it, the Senators had to have a very, very good finish, and that included very few losses. So the Flyers are going to have to keep winning if they're going to get there.
All right. Dan makes a great point. When that clock hits 0 and the cup is 1, it's unlike any other scene in sports. Equipment flying all over the ice. Everybody's hugging and celebrating. NFL players get hounded by 300 reporters on the field before they can even get close to a teammate. It is so true. And the only time I think that got disrupted, and you may remember this in 06, when they kind of let the family on the ice too early when the Hurricanes won, and they never got to skate around with the cup. Do you remember that in Raleigh? It all just got messed up, and it just became almost like last night when nobody can get to Tom Brady, and it was just a craziness.
Yeah, 06 was one of the last, was actually probably the last time I was not down on the ice at the end of the game, one of the last times, because the following year, the league, I thought, did something really smart, which was they allowed the media to come on the ice, and they really, you know, because they have a natural barrier of the boards there, you know, they're able to do a better job. In the NFL, there's no barrier, really. I mean, once you're on that surface, you're there, and everybody seems to run the field. Now, maybe they could do a better job with putting up barriers to prevent that chaos at the end of the game. But, you know, in hockey, they've done a really good job at that for many years. And I go back to 07 with Anaheim and Ottawa. It was the first year they allowed us on the ice, and I can remember interviewing a couple members of the Anaheim Ducks, including Scott Niedermayer, Rob Niedermayer. Yeah, I remember, yeah. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun, and they really have it's a much better scene at the end of a Stanley Cup final now, because it used to be they would all jam us into the locker room, and there was just too many people in there, and you had families in there and all kinds of people. And I can remember one year, I believe it was 01 when Colorado won, that Dave Reed, who now works with me here at the NHL Network, you know, got up on a box or something and basically asked the media to politely, you know, to leave the locker room after, you know, 45 minutes or an hour, because they wanted to celebrate with their friends and family. And now with having us on the ice, the players do have that kind of sanctum of the locker room and to have a place to go with their families to celebrate, and we in the media can still have complete the availability to get these guys to do the things we need to do after the game. So it's worked out really good in the NHL. And the NFL, as you saw last night, it's kind of a little bit chaotic.
Yeah, definitely was chaotic. And I remember 07 being on the ice with you, got a chance to interview Timo Solani, who won the Cup with the Ducks. And
that was awesome. And
we were together in 2010 in Philadelphia when the Blackhawks won, too. So.
That's right. That's right.
It's really a lot of fun, and it's a great privilege. But you want to have that moment where the players can celebrate with the cup and be together without having, you know, the media and people without skates trying to, like, stumble all over the ice around them. So
yeah,
it is a kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, no question.
All right. Great job as usual.
Oh, you're the best, Donnie.
And we will try to get together next Monday.
That Super Bowl, by the way. Oh, God.
Well, I got a tweet from somebody. I wasn't going to close it out with this, but David Like asked, with yesterday's Super Bowl being a bit of a snooze fest, what Stanley Cup final have you both watched that you both look back and say, boy, that was the least exciting final? Usually I kind of forget those things, so it's hard to rank the least exciting final. But, you know,
well,
it's different.
It has to be a sweep of some kind, right?
Right. I mean, there was that run in the late 90s, remember, I guess from 95 through 98, where every final ended in a sweep.
The, you know, Fox years.
Yeah, exactly.
The entirety of the Fox contract, which is amazing. They had the national, they had NHL national coverage for 4 years, and each of the years they had it, it was a sweep.
Yeah, and so you know, the Devils upsetting Detroit was kind of fun, especially growing up as a Devil fan. I'm not going to look at that as boring in 95.
Yeah.
96, when Florida got swept, but at least game four ended in, what was it, triple overtime, Uwe Krupp scoring the goal for the win. So that was exciting. 97 and 98, you know, they were sweeps, and there were moments, but I guess those were both, unless you were a Red Wings fan.
Red Wings winning that first cup against Philly, you know, you had two big markets, and it was exciting from a Red Wing standpoint for sure. In 98, they beat Washington. Washington was kind of an upstart group. The Florida thing was the Florida thing was interesting because they were such a great story winning those other series, but the fact that they, you know, were dispatched in the way they were, even though that game four went on for a long time, you never really got the feeling that the Panthers were going to score. So, you know, that might be up there, you know, on the list. But I'd have to really think about it. And because hockey is a four game, you know, a four out of seven game series, it's different than a one game where if you have a dud, you have a dud.
Yeah. There's always going to be like one aspect of the game or one moment that's going to be kind of exciting, close game or whatever. Yeah. So it's kind of tough to compare. But you know what? EJ and I are here's the thing. we're both glass half full guys, so we always look at things in an exciting, fun way. Right. So it's hard for us to look at negative like that. Just yeah, not in our
great,
soul.
Listen, last night they had a great commercial, the NFL, with the players celebrating 100 years of the NFL.
Yes,
where the guys were, having that at the banquet, and then everybody starts running around. That was fun. That was good. After that, not much.
No, not much, but I'm sure a lot of people watched it.
Gladys Knight knocked it out
she
during
did.
The national anthem.
She did.
Terrific. I mean, the coin toss was good.
Yeah.
It was solid. You got full explanation by the official there of the coin and what was on each side. That was really entertaining.
That was something. And you know what? If you're not a fan of the Jets, but probably was entertaining to watch Jet fans throw up in their mouth that Joe Namath had to give the trophy to the Patriots.
There you go.
So
that was another thing. I like the way the NFL does that, by the way.
That is cool.
A great player kind of come through, a number of players. I think that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
I really like that. But, those were the highlights.
Yeah. See, we always find the positives.
That's what we do.
We will find the positive in any situation.
Exactly.
That's why we've become so close over these years. Enjoy it.
That's true.
Dude, have a great week. We'll talk next week.
All right, you got it.
All right, that's the great E.J. Raddick. Joins us every Monday here on Game Misconduct as we enjoy batting around the subjects of the day. Let's take a look at the games that are being played tonight. We got the Kings and the Rangers over at Madison Square Garden for a 7 o'clock start. The Leafs and the Ducks. Ducks in free fall, but just like every other team in the Western Conference, still very much alive. So the Leafs will play host to the Ducks at 7. Also at 7, the Flyers will try to keep their winning streak alive as they take on a Canuck team that would make the playoffs if the season ended today. And at 8:30, the Coyotes, very much alive in the playoffs, also will take on a playoff team, the Dallas Stars. So really, at this point, anytime Western teams get together, it's a must-watch because everybody, with the exception of Los Angeles, still very much alive in the playoff race. Even Chicago, with 49 points, have won 4 in a row, find themselves alive in this whole thing. All right, we'll be back again tomorrow. We'll recap the games from today, preview the games coming up on Tuesday. You can always get in touch with me at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York. And worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.